This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
The moment to get that in the ground, and it's not a good time to pick vegetables to be stored. And why would you at this time of year? Biodynamic outlook, moon and Gemini, air sign. It's a good time for flowering plants. The sidereal forecast, moon and Gemini, they say that it's a good time for promoting flower growth, though otherwise generally barren and dry. And that's it for both the conventional and the alternative forecasts. We want to get right into it today because we do have a guest who's going to be joining us in a little while. But first this, as if you have not heard yet, on May 9th, for the first time ever, the carbon dioxide counter on the side of Mauna Loa, the most important scientific instrument on Earth, recorded a daily average of above 400 parts per million. It's a grim landmark. It's been several million years since CO2 reached these levels in the atmosphere. That's 400 parts per million. And the next day in Portland, the 10th, the Dalai Lama was in town talking about climate change, environmental catastrophe, and the hazards of limitless growth, which the governor apparently felt could be balanced with environmental concerns. That in itself, of course, is a concern. The Dalai Lama did kick off his four-day visit to Portland a bit earlier. He talked about his understanding of pollution. He, interestingly enough, Dalai Lama says that he came to environmental environmental awareness through water. He was visiting India, and he was told you can't drink the water because it's not good for you, it's polluted. And he was astonished, and that's what got the ball rolling. Interestingly enough, the panelists at Saturday's talk managed to avoid the term fluoride throughout the entire talk. It was an interesting morning. The Dalai Lama said that his views were shared by other religious leaders, and by the afternoon he had talked about mothers and violence. He's scheduled to deliver a lecture at the University of Oregon a bit later, and that's it for the Dalai Lama in Portland and environmentalism. I'm sure that there is a recording of that available. We're going to put a link to it, and you can have a listen. The high point, of course, was aside from the Dalai Lama, of course, was Governor Kitzhaber, who quoted Thomas Pynchon in Gravity's Rainbow. Double jeopardy is a strange legal conundrum, and we don't encounter that often in modern life, except, of course, in the instances when one is indigent and has inadequate legal representation. But this, Jerry Koch, a New York City anarchist and legal activist, has been subpoenaed for the second time to a federal grand jury investigating the same event. In 2009, Jerry was subpoenaed for the first time and refused to testify. And Friday, as in 2009, the grand jury is being used to conduct a witch hunt against anarchists and political radicals. And refusing to testify, Jerry risks being held in contempt of court, and he faces incarceration in a federal prison for the duration of the grand jury, which could be up to 18 months, by the way. Under the guise of an exploratory legal investigation, the grand jury is a secretive tool of repression that aims to intimidate and punish those who refuse to collaborate with the state. There's a long history of grand juries being used whenever the state focuses on a new enemy. They were used in the 50s, of course, during the Red Scare, 60s against Black Panthers, and, of course, more recently right here in Cascadia, the Green Scare. We're waiting right now to see if we can get Alana Krivos-Kaufman on the line, an organizer and activist who is central to the movement that began with no less than Stephen Hawking, the physicist, encouraging a boycott of Israel. It's to get to understand the full import of this, it's important to think about students and the effect that student activism, student uprising, student resistance is having on politics today, and the significance, of course, right now, with Netanyahu and Kerry having at it, and the undue weight of Israeli politics in the Middle East. Good morning, Alana. We're glad to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So this all got started with Stephen Hawking. Can you tell us a bit about that and why? What students are very much at the center of this. There are a great many student activists, as I understand it, who are leading this movement to pressure TIAA Kreb to divest. Can you tell us why this has happened? Why this came about?
Yes, definitely. So the We Divest campaign, and today in New York is a really exciting day for the We Divest campaign, which is a national movement to divest from the Israeli occupation. And here in the U.S., we're working on this by targeting TIAA Kreb, which is one of the largest financial services institutions. And so we're pressuring them to divest from companies that profit from the Israeli occupation of the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. And today's a really exciting day in New York City because students all across New York from different colleges, Columbia, NYU, Hunter, the CUNY schools, are delivering a message to the TIAA Kreb headquarters today in New York at 4 p.m. That students are the future, and they are calling on TIAA Kreb to divest from all companies benefiting from the Israeli occupation. So it's been a really exciting day, and they're actually delivering a message from students across the country. So throughout the winter and the spring, students across the country from 23 different schools took part in actions at their local campuses to call for divestment, for specifically telling TIAA Kreb that students are their future, they're their future clients, and students are the future of this movement, and are calling on TIAA Kreb to do the ethical thing. They claim to be a socially responsible company, and so we are calling on them to live up to that. So it's an exciting day here in New York, and we'll be delivering the message to TIAA Kreb, student demands around divestment specifically, as well as a really beautiful banner, which brings together the images of the 250 students across the country who have been doing these actions at their local campuses.
So what impact would it have? Do you have any numbers there that you might suggest to listeners? If the TIAA Kreb is persuaded, this is how apartheid ended in South Africa, was a student movement encourage companies to divest. So here we are back again. Anyone, of course, who says that the situation in occupied Palestine is not parallel, if perhaps even more extreme than in South Africa, is simply not seeing the situation. The other part of this, too, is the Israeli presence in the Middle East is and its power and its looming threat. Of course, they're the most heavily armed and bellicose country in the region. It certainly ups the tension in an already very tense part of the world. And it seems that if some of that power were reduced or equalized, that a resolution to other problems might come at not quite such a high cost. So what regarding divestment, what effect has it had to date, and what do you expect it to have moving forward? We're close to out of time, so I apologize, but if you have a brief answer to that, we want to know.
Great, yeah. So economic divestment is a tool that's part of the international boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, which, as you said, was central to ending apartheid in South Africa, and which students were really central to. And in that movement, banks like Barclays divested because of student activism and student pressure, and they recognized the power that students have. And so the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement actually responds to the 2005 Palestinian Civil Society call, and is an international movement. And here in the U.S., we're targeting the through the We Divest campaign, TAI Crest, because they're the largest, one of the largest financial services organizations, and most people at universities, at a variety of nonprofits, many of these people, and probably many of you listening, have your retirement invested in TIA Crest, and so we're coming together, as in South Africa and in the Great Boycotts, to call for an ethical response to the human rights violations.
Thank you, Alana. Thank you so much for being with us today. Alana Krieger-Kaufman, of course, is with We Divest Coalition. We're going to invite her back and perhaps have one of the students on the show later in the week. This is a very important week also for art. The fate of Oregon's forest hangs in the balance. Wyden is central to this. And we could end up with some very serious problems regarding the protection of our last wildlands that coupled, of course, with these alarming laws against an attempt to quash a protest in the forest. All that tomorrow. This has been Akaskadia for Monday, May 13th, 2013. Thanks to our engineer today and Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University, the University for Grown-Ups, where it's never too late to earn a bachelor's or master's degree to achieve your dreams. Adults of all ages choose Merrill Hurst to gain knowledge from professors who practice what they teach. Now enrolling for fall term. Information at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin and Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin and Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359. Or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. California's climate law, which relies heavily on a mechanism known as cap and trade, is the most ambitious in the United States and is being touted by environmentalists around the country. But according to a recent article in The Nation magazine, the new law may not force the state's worst polluters to clean up their operations, which is a disservice that disproportionately affects the state's poorest. This morning, we talked with the article's author, Madeline Ostrander, about why environmental justice advocates in low-income communities of color around the state think that the new cap-and-trade regulations have given California industries leeway to buy their way out of greening their operations. Madeline is a Seattle-based writer and senior editor of Yes Magazine. Her work has also appeared in The Sun Magazine, High Country News, and Alternet. Madeline, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we're actually talking to you this morning. You're in Australia.
I am, yes.
Does this have anything to do with your work on climate change, or is this a entirely different project you're working on now?
No, this has everything to do with my work on climate change. Australia is a country that's extremely vulnerable among developed nations to the impacts of climate change.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about that towards the end, but we're going to talk about California
sure.
to start with. Now, over the last few days, measurements have detected that the parts per million in the atmosphere of carbon dioxide have now reached 400. A number which is very chilling because we're getting closer and closer to the point of no return where no matter what we do to mitigate our carbon emissions and other greenhouse gas emissions, we're not going to be able to stop this freight train that's just rolling on towards demise. So let's talk a little bit about why it's so imperative that states like California actually have taken steps to mitigate climate change and why it's important for the United States as a nation and the rest of the nations in the world to follow.
Yeah, well, California really has gone it alone in a lot of ways. California set up a program, this program called Cap and Trade, to try to create an economic incentive for industries to change their behavior and produce less carbon dioxide, because to date, industries around the world, for the most part, you know, with the exception of a similar program in Europe, have been able to emit carbon dioxide pretty much for free, and have not had to pay for the cost that has for the rest of us living on this planet, the cost that it, you know, the impact that it has in terms of global warming. And that has a lot to do with